G'day guys, g'day ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Guitar Wank podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host with not so most tonight because I've got the flu, got the cold, Troy McCabin. Excuse me, you haven't got a choice. Oh man, this is what kids will do to you. Alright, here we go, we're going to do number 92 tonight on the Guitar Wank episode. Hope we're all doing well out there in this crazy, wonderful, nuts world. Man, we've got fires, hurricanes, fucking America is just completely nuts at the moment. Maybe America is starting to change. It's like, how far can Trump push before America goes, okay, enough? I'm wondering, man, the rest of the world, foreigners, you are laughing your asses off. I can attest to that. My God, that's a comedy show. And not a good one. Anyway, Guitar Wank Podcast, we're going to get back into Scott and Bruce and myself. This is from a couple of weeks back. And I don't even know what we said. So this is the problem about not doing a show and then getting it up straight away, because I forget what's said. Do you think I'm going to sit here and edit all this stuff? No. I'm just going to let it run. So there could be some crazy shit in here that we probably was like, hey, Troy, you need to edit that out. And maybe there isn't. I don't know. But anyway, we're soon going to find out. Really, at this point, it doesn't matter. Yeah, thanks to all our sponsors. You know who you are. Wire World Pro Audio Cables, D'Addario Guitar Strings, Jimmy Dunlop. Do any of you guys use these products? Actually, we had someone email the other week that they bought a bunch of exotic pedals and they loved them. They didn't know about them until Guitar Wank, so that's kind of cool. So Exotic Pedals, thank you so much. Looking after our peeps. We're going to go visit Exotic sometime soon when I get some free time. Gotta say a big g'day to Robbie Garland. Rob, you like that hot woman that I never got to date, mate? Well, that's not true, but that's kind of weird. Maybe I should edit that out. Oh, Rob, we're gonna catch up. Me and Rob have been trying to catch up. You don't know Rob Garland? He's a great guitar player, great bloke. You can check him out on True Fire. He does a lot of cool stuff there. A lot of great playing he does. Been trying to catch up forever. Our schedules are just not working out. And then when we're finally together, I'm sick. Trying to get together, I get sick. Bloody hopeless. Bloody useless. So I've got to say a big g'day to Rob. I'm hoping I'm feeling better tomorrow, mate. We can get together. I'm going to get Rob on maybe Guitar Wank Extra. Because it's all this build-up. It's going to be a massive climatic get-together of an Englishman and an Aussie talking. That just made everyone tune out. Alright, I'm rambling, let's go. Let's get on with this shit. Have a great week, be safe, look after each other, keep guitar wanking, spread the word. Thank you so much for all the donations, really appreciate it. If you are waiting on a t-shirt, it is coming. If you didn't get it, I'm sending it again. It's coming. So yeah. And yeah, I'll see you guys all next week. Thank you.
how far away is, you probably don't know, I don't know, I would like to know, how far ahead time-wise is Timeless than On the Mountain? Is it around the same time period?
Well, I think Timeless was early 70s, maybe mid-70s. And that would be my guess.
Maybe On the Mountain was later.
I mean, but Timeless was a whole different thing because of then, you understand that it was ECM.
Sure.
And he was not into burning stuff.
No.
Manfred Eicher is this guy named who started a record with the European Jazz label. It was a lot of brilliant records over the years. You know, Keith Jarrett was on that label. Ayerto was on that label. There's a lot of great guys on the right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, but I remember, like, you know, a lot of the European guys were on that label. And sonically, there was a lot of reverb
Everhard Weber. And the saxophone player, Jan Garber.
Exactly. And Kenny Wheeler.
Kenny Wheeler.
And it was like very reverberated, very spacious music. It wasn't like the hard swinging. It was a real departure from the American jazz. And yet these American, well, Jan Hammer's European, but Jack DeJohnette, John Abercrombie kind of built this thing. Yeah. And of course, I'm sure if we could have a discussion, I guess Jack is the one to talk to. How much, who directed that? You know what I mean?
A little bit about it because I know some guys.
Yeah,
but
you know.
You know Michael Ross, the guy who, the writer who we called the wrong name.
Well, he just
wrote to me and he asked me if I would take a participation in a discussion about ECM. After John Abercrombie's passing, because they wanted to talk and have a discussion in an interview form about ECM Records. Mm-hmm. And I told him I'm the wrong guy to ask because I didn't like them. I didn't like the musicians. I didn't like the production values.
Right.
Because to me, in my viewpoint, I think everybody should be an individual. And that doesn't just relegate them to the notes and the vocabulary, but also to the production.
Right.
And I think ECM was the McDonald's of the jazz labels. You know, they tried to make everything sound the same, you know, and I think it did fit some of the players, and I think it absolutely ruined some of the others. You know, the others that needed a completely dry edge and a rawness that was taken away from them by this fucking guy's concept of what he thinks every fucking album should sound like. I think he was kind of an egomaniac.
Right.
I don't really like him. He's a villain in my book. Not because, and I appreciate that he put out a lot of great music because the musicians were great, but he tried to get too involved in what they were doing. I don't like that. Like, I've never used a producer, because if someone told me, hey, you're going to go in the studio, I'm going to put a shitload of reverb on you so that you sound like all my other artists, I would go tell him to fuck himself.
Right.
You know?
I would love to watch that conversation.
And, well, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm just, you know what I'm saying? I'm sure some of you would say the same thing to you if someone came up and said, hey, Bruce, I want you to make this record. Now, you can play whatever music you want, but I'm going to put chorus on everything, on every single guitar part.
That
sounds
like a Joe DiIorio record.
And there would be a part of you that rebels against that because you have your sound. And I know that you're not probably into the layering and the overall, like, you know, maybe things that I might pay more attention to.
But maybe I am. I mean, if I had the opportunity to.
Exactly. Maybe I'm more of an engineer than mm-hmm. you are, right? So for me, like, my records are not just showing off or not just showing off.
Oh, no, your records are a brilliant production. You know, you spend more time on one guitar solo than I spend on the entire record.
Well, yeah, it's not about the time.
But you do.
Spent.
I mean, but it is time. I mean, enabling yourself to have the time enables the luxury to indulge in that.
Sure.
In that.
But
I
if we want to talk about that, I don't understand why everybody doesn't want that or everybody doesn't.
Everybody
do that.
Does want that, but there's a certain amount of reality that comes into play.
Well, it's cheap, so it can't be about money.
It's not necessarily cheap. Let's assume I wanted to do that. I'd have to buy all the equipment. That's not so expensive.
It's not expensive.
And then the amount of time I would spend doing it, versus what I'd end up at the end and what it was worth to me versus spending right. time doing a lot of other things like writing, composing, playing with new people, working sure. on new projects. It becomes, you know, and like what the intrinsic value and qualitative value is of what I'm presenting versus, like, if I do have a lot of high production ideas
mm-hmm.
that are just going to literally take me off the board of doing a lot of the things I do
right,
in order to
right.
do them.
Well,
I weight that yeah. both, of course, economically with what I want to do with my uh-huh. life, then you have to make decisions.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I hear orchestral music. I mean, I've written tons of orchestral music. I just don't have the bandwidth to continue to do the things I want to do and the things I need to do and do that.
Right. No, that makes sense. And a lot of times I feel the same way
yeah.
because there's a big part of me that wants to better my craft at being a guitar player. Some of that has to be given up in favor of the long process of writing a song, composition. I'm not Joe Zawinul. It takes me a long time to write a fucking tune, up to 2 or 3 weeks
right.
to write a song that I really like, that I'm happy to say I wrote it, you know, because I'm constantly throwing shit away and then trying something else and throwing that away. And then finally, until I get to the stuff that I like, it can take a long time.
Yeah.
Sometimes not, but most of the time it does. Then there's that part of me that, you know, there's the part of the production where just getting tones alone is, and getting tones that you really like and that you're proud of, is a very time consuming effort.
And if you haven't done that for a long time, you kind of, that's you might be wasting your time.
Well, no.
It depends on the setting you're putting it in. Like today, with what I did, I mean, it's not rocket science. It's me and a voice. It's my right. guitar and a voice. I like the sound of my acoustic guitar. I had an array of great amps to choose from. I found the one I liked the best, which was a beautiful sound. It was a 58 Bassman.
Shit. Who doesn't like that?
You know, and right? then, I mean, so, you know, but granted, I'm not really pushing it because I'm playing so soft.
Yeah,
but
those amps are magic, man.
And you know, so I'm playing that, and I'm going to blend in the sound of my acoustic guitar with the voice. I mean, I could sit around for 6 months with that and not do any better than I'm getting now. It right. comes down to like saying something,
mm-hmm.
you know, granted now, if I'm talking about lots of textures and lots of placement and panning and different instruments and different transitions with lots of different sounds, of course that whole idea is a stupid idea. But yeah. in the context of the idea that I'm working in, hey, it's about getting the sound out of your instrument now. You know, you can't. You got a great amp. You got acoustic. You know, it's like make
yeah,
it happen.
Why, yeah,
it's the fingers now.
Yeah, why would you fucking even go down that road when you're being a player? You're delivering the music when you got a guy that can do all that shit, and he's been probably doing it 10
well,
hours.
Well, I do
hours
because I do actually hear stuff like that, and would love to do it, but I have to make decisions. How much time do I have in my life? How much energy yeah. do I have? And I do need to fulfill certain responsibilities.
My question was more of a hypothetical question. Like, in other words, of course, there's lots of guys like you. You're doing a lot of different kind of stuff, and you know, that's the way it should be because you're doing what you want to do. But my question was like, why not take at least one period of your life and just say, you know what, I'm just going to do something. I'm going to get involved in this project and just fuck everything else for a minute. I'm just going to do this because I've never done it before and I just
right.
want to do it.
Okay, yeah.
Right.
That saying it right now would be the time to do it because everything is so cheap. You could actually have a home studio for less than $5,000 in your house.
Yeah.
And actually all the time you need to make a thing. And I'm reminded of, let me just talk about one thing. We're going to do a very, very short Wikipedia here.
Wankipedia.
Okay.
There's a guy who just sent me a record. His name is Daniel Zimmerman.
Yeah. It's great, isn't it?
It's my favorite guitar record of the last 5 years.
Hold it a second.
Daniel, I actually wrote the part for the liner notes.
I wrote him a letter.
It was
and
great,
I said,
isn't it?
I said, this is the best record I've heard in the last 5 years. I can't believe what I'm hearing. This is a fucking work of art.
It's great. It's just great.
It's so good. It's great.
Well, you know, this
so good.
This brings it just...
Because he actually... But can I read you what I wrote? because I actually did some of the liner, whatever it is. Uh-huh. I would like to read this to you because I'm glad we agree, because I really just
oh, I think it's a great loved
it.
Record.
I just enjoyed it
so
much. Me too.
I thought it was such a good record.
Okay, check this out. This
I'm
is
laughing
what,
my ass off.
This is funny because this is what I wrote. Daniel Zimmerman's new CD is a tour de force. By fusing varied styles with great playing, innovative compositions, and a personalized voice replete with wit and fun, he brings the music to life. Each track offers a sonic journey through the musical mind of a visionary artist, one who knows where he wants to go and how to get there.
That's it. I mean...
Well, can I butt in now?
Yeah. If you have to.
Well, I was going to bring up something completely different.
Because he's a big fan of ours.
Yeah, well, yeah. This is so funny about...
And we're not just doing this because he's a fan of
ours. No, he actually kind of ripped me a new one. Because I had an email from Daniel, and I have no idea who Daniel Zimmerman.
Daniel, Dan.
And I was about to bring this up with you guys tonight because he pulled me up on something, and I was a little unsure about how I felt about it today, so I didn't write back straight away. But Daniel wrote to me, and he's obviously a mad fan of the show, and he said, "Hey Troy, you know I'm a fan of the show, and I know you are not racist, and you were only joking."
But
when I did the intro for last week's show the other day, I said, I was ranting, but anyway, besides that, I said, oh, Bruce handles all the money. This in context, what I said, Bruce handles all the money.
He's Jewish.
It's probably a good thing because he's Jewish. Now, in my head, I was giving you a compliment.
Well, it was funny, and I would have said that myself.
And I know you've said that before too. Well, Daniel was a
folks,
little offended.
The amount of money I'm handling is like not enough to even keep us in, you know, dreams.
Yeah, exactly. So
like you
anyway,
know,
so
I'm kind of a backdoor Jew at this point.
Because I said the Bruce is a Jew, so he is good. He is good at handling the money. Comment was hard for me to hear. I would hate for the podcast to lose its edge, but for me, that hurt my feelings. As a Jewish person, I've had to combat this stereotype, so it was a little hard for him to hear.
Oh,
now,
okay.
As an Aussie person, an Australian...
Which we make fun of all the time.
Yeah, I would make... Sorry, Daniel. I would totally make fun of this. But because in my head, that's a compliment. Jews are good with money. That's how I was kind of brought up. They were just better
at looking
after the money.
I know a lot of Jews that are really bad with money.
Right, okay. And it probably is. So I do apologize, Daniel, but I didn't obviously mean it
by that.
Can
I tell a Jewish joke?
Yeah, you can tell.
I got a good one. Listen to this one. Okay, so there's two rabbis, and they're at the altar. And what would you call it in Jewish
language? Okay, just there are two rabbis.
Anyway, there are two rabbis, and they're praying to God, and one rabbi is... Oh, Lord, I am so worthless. I'm just a grain of sand compared to your omnipotence. You know, I'm just worthless compared to the great omnipotent God. And the other rabbi tries to outdo him, and he goes, I am nothing but just, I'm like, you know, pond scum compared to the wonderfulness of your grace. You know, I'm just nothing. I'm worthless. Absolutely just throw me away, right, into the pits of hell. And then the janitor back there in the last row, he's sweeping the floor, and he hears him, and he says, man, well, maybe I ought to pray too. And he goes, oh, Lord, I'm a lowly janitor. I'm nothing. I'm just a piece of dirt. I'm just nothing compared to your omnipotent glory, right? And then one rabbi taps the other one and goes, hey, look who thinks he's nothing.
Yeah.
And there's some ego joke for you right there.
But I'm a little confused, Daniel, because if you are a fan of the show, I'm so surprised haven't offended you before.
You hit a nerve for him, and he's right, and it is a stereotype.
No, that's a stereotype.
I respect it, even though it doesn't bother me.
Daniel, I'm going to have to say something here. You know I love your record, and I love you, and you're a great person, but I am reminded of Isaac Hayes, when he was on South Park, and he made fun of every fucking religion there is, Christianity, Buddhism, Islam. He poked fun at everybody, and as soon as the show did an episode on Scientology, he quit the show. So, come on, man. Man up. listen to, you know what I mean?
Well,
it's like,
you know,
you've listened to the show and you've heard us like fuck with everybody there is to fuck with.
Well, Bruce has said that joke. The only reason why I said it, because Bruce has said it.
Yeah, I have said that, but I didn't say it on the air.
But you're, yeah, you said it on the air.
You know,
no, I didn't.
There's no holds barred. This is like a roast.
Look,
you can say it because you're a Jew, right?
Yes, that's true too.
And I can't say it because I'm not a Jew.
Right. But I would like to think of this as like Comedy Central, and this is a roast, and we're allowed to say anything we fucking want to because we are,
you
right
know,
now.
Yeah, of course we can.
We're in the role of comedians right now.
Oh, of course we can. So. And Daniel, he's not going to leave the show. But,
no,
you
no.
know, he was, and I appreciate it. He told
I do
us,
appreciate
hurt
the
his
email.
Feelings.
Thanks,
and,
Daniel.
And you know, hey, goodbye. You know, I mean, sorry about that, Troy. I can tell you,
I
that
took
Troy,
it. I was giving a compliment.
Troy is
that's
my
how
dear
I...
friend. And, you know, I know he doesn't treat me any different than his non-Jewish like friends. I know that.
He treats me really bad.
But do you know why Jews don't
people.
Drink?
What?
Why?
Because it kills the pain.
Well, I do appreciate it. And I didn't know Daniel was such a monster player. And he's got an amazing album out.
Let me just continue my little rant first
okay,
about Daniel.
Okay.
Oh, wait, it wasn't a rant.
It wasn't a rant. Praise. It was a praise.
Right.
But I just want to rant about something that is diatonically opposed. Diatonically opposed.
No, diametrically.
Where diametrically opposed, right. So now if I hadn't drank that Jack Daniels, I would have thought of diametrically opposed.
Yeah,
myself.
I know.
So,
but, you
so
know,
anyway.
To you, that means doing your sister, right?
This is when the show turns to shit, ladies.
Yeah, right. But when I first heard the album, and of course I'd never heard of Daniel other than him being a fan and a listener, and I'd never heard his music before or anything. And when I heard it, I was so just blown away, not just by the fact that he's a good player, but by the tones and by the layering, and everything was so amazing sounding. Just like, wow. He's calling me and asking questions about tone, and now I'm going to have to be calling him and asking questions about tone.
And the studio he works in is a really cool studio.
Well,
too.
He really has the sound down. Now,
what kind of music? What kind of are we talking?
I mean, I hear influences of Latin music. I hear influences of Scofield. I hear
Bill Frisell a little bit.
Frisell.
Yeah.
I hear some rock, of course, influences.
Some Scott Henderson influences, I would say, because he's using a couple of my little techniques that I do, you know, which I consider a compliment.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
And
he's taking some lessons with me, and ain't no Bruce Foreman in any of that. He's a smart man.
But he's taken. He's not really.
There's a smart man. Right then, I knew I had somebody.
Not really
who was
copying my notes or anything like that, but more copying the soundscapes sometimes. Not copying. Copying's a bad word, but just influenced by some of the soundscapes that he's probably heard on some of Michael Landau's records or my records or, you know, guys that do that. Pat Metheny's done some of that kind of stuff too, that's really textured and layered, and you can tell that he's not only listened to that stuff, but he's really figured it out. Like, he really uses reverb in a beautiful way, not too much, not too, just the right amount for the song, you know, and just everything is just put together in such a thoughtful way. The antithesis of a lot of jazz musicians who put out stuff very quickly, don't think about it. They go into the studio, they play, and it's like, this is my life right now. This is what I'm doing, and this is how I play my instrument, and it's how I play at this particular moment in time, and I'm going to play, and then I leave the studio, and the record's done. It's basically a gig. It's a live gig. Mm-hmm. Almost no effort went into it other than the daily effort of playing your instrument.
Well, and deciding the material and arranging the material.
True, but even some of that, in some of the, what I would call the more napkin-oriented
okay,
jazz
well,
records.
Okay, well, I can't
are,
speak to that,
are,
but I mean,
are, you, know, just,
you know, in the case of mine, what he would call that. You
well,
know,
yeah, but
a
you
lot
put a
of
lot of you put in a lot of preparation. You were working on that album for a while, and when you listen to it, you can tell a lot of thought went into it. There's a lot of jazz records that are not like that.
Right.
That, you know, especially some of the younger cats. I mean, they're basically just going into the studio, and it's a gig. It's just another gig. It's like, let's play our set the way we played it the last two nights at the club, and this recording session's going to last a day. There's absolutely no thought. When it's basically just recorded theater,
right?
Right. There's no elements of a movie or anything that required any thought other than I'm just going to go play a gig, which I play gigs every night, and I know there's no fucking thought into it.
Playing gigs every night?
You just, you know.
Why are you complaining so much?
Well, yeah. But, you know, when you walk out on the stage, you're basically going to play a gig, you're going to do the best you can, but then when the gig is over, it's over.
Right.
There's not going to be any overdubbing. There's not going to be any layering. There's not going to be any mixing. It's done. So it's the same exact concept. You go into the studio, you do the same thing that you do on stage, and then you take it in the hands of the engineer and say, do your thing.
Yep.
Mix it, make it sound good, whatever. Right. And there's a million jazz records out there, and a lot of them are great because the playing's great, and I have nothing against them.
Right. I mean, but there are records that will never be surpassed.
Right, and they're exactly great. That. I mean, you know, John Coltrane, Giant Steps.
There
they
you
went
go.
Into the studio, and they played. And
those
it's
live
a, what,
sessions
awesome.
With Afro Blue Impressions
yeah,
record
sure,
where they're
you know,
just like going for it.
I have a live record myself where you know, we recorded and it is what it is. That's how I played on that particular night. I'm not crazy about it, but like it's not my best playing, but it's not my worst playing either. So
right.
I'm not going to hate myself for it. It's just what it is.
Yeah, you'll find other things to hate yourself.
Yeah, right. I got plenty of other things. But what my point is that Dan's record, you can really tell that it, I mean, it's a real masterpiece, like a real, you know, wow.
Wow.
Now,
And yet, it doesn't come off as a highly
pretentious
thing. No. It's very organic sounding.
Yeah, it does.
I mean,
that's
why I think I liked it so much.
Yeah, I liked it
for that
reason, too.
Is that it didn't smart of, like, he played that solo 50 times, you know what I mean? And everything,
you mean
like
my records.
Everything gets so sterile that it's just like,
right.
It's like watching porno. It's contrived, mm-hmm. You know? It really had an organic feel that was fun.
Okay.
It was just fun. I mean, you could tell this guy, who I know is a friend of mine now, you know, he takes lessons from me.
What's Daniel's album called?
Was
it just Daniel Zimmerman?
It's called, I have it in my car, and I've been in Brazil now for a while, so I just saw it for a minute, now I can't remember the name.
If people want to listening to the show, and who...
It's all over Facebook, so look
right,
for Daniel Zimmerman's a guitar player in Santa Barbara,
okay.
So you'll be able to find him on Facebook.
Now, Bruce, when I said that Bruce has got the money, he's a Jew, that's a good thing. So Daniel would have taken that... Because I'm trying to work out, because from my head...
It's just, you know, I mean, it's like anybody doesn't like... certain people get tired of hearing stereotypes. That's all it is. And it's called Drifting Home, is the name
right,
of it.
Right,
right, Drifting
right.
Home.
I knew it had something to do with travel.
Right.
Yeah, it was
and,
a travel.
Drifting
and,
Home.
And, you know, I mean, hey, people, you know, some brothers... use the N-word all day, but get pissed off if you use it. You know, I mean, it's like they'll even say it to you 50 times, but
right.
If you say it once,
I think,
back,
but
it
I, but I think,
no, I mean, and that's maybe an extreme example.
No,
but
no.
I'm just saying we all have like open sores through life.
Well,
you know what I mean? And we hear something, and somebody cavalier puts something out, and it just rubs them the wrong way. And there, you know, I mean, that's just the way it is. And
no,
I
know
respect
that, but
the
I'm
people
just,
that remind people that,
I'm
hey,
I'm trying
that
to think
me.
About how he took it and how I was thinking. Because I was thinking, it's a good thing that
know,
the Jews
know,
got
but
the...
I know, but you see, you're like taking it way too far.
Yeah.
He was letting you know that this rubbed him the wrong way.
Because
and, you know,
people
and,
sometimes
and you're letting
think
him know
Jews
that
are
meant,
tight with money.
You were just being funny.
Is that
you
right?
You were probably... What?
Is it because that could be taken... being
Jews
tight
are,
with
Jews
money?
Jews are tight with money. They're good with money. They hoard money. You
yeah,
know.
I thought
stuff.
It was Bruce has got the money. That's a good thing because
yeah,
he's a
and
Jew.
And even though you heard me say the joke and it was funny to you
yeah.
And you said it and you meant nothing by
I
it, he took
it
wrong.
Funny.
But you know what?
You repeated it.
Regardless, who cares? Because
well, I was
we're
just curious.
We're comedians.
No, no. Actually, he it's cares because he like, doesn't want to hurt
well,
anybody.
Yeah, I don't want to hurt.
And
a
I
fan.
Think, and that's true. And I mean, when I tell a joke. I mean, I know I'm probably going to piss a million people off, and I can't stop myself, but at the same time, I really don't want to. I just want them to laugh.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying, though. That's
right.
The, if you know us, and you know that we're just trying to be funny, what the hell, why would you be offended?
Well, you know...
Well, it's this kind of show.
It's this kind of show. That's like Family Guy, where there's an episode where it's the Star Wars episode, right?
Right.
And they're escaping from one of the big battle cruisers, and where should we go? And Peter says, who's Han Solo? He says, well, we should go visit Lando Calrissian. And Brian, who's Chewbacca, says, you know, who's that? Or what's that? Is that a planet? And he says, no, it's not a planet. It's a guy. He's a black guy that runs this place. He's probably the only black guy in the galaxy. And Brian says, well, let's hope so. And the rest of them go, oh, you know, I mean, that shit is funny. Who's not going to laugh at that? You think black people get mad because they said that? Come on.
Some do.
Well, maybe some do, but they do fuck them.
It's okay. And then they say so, we all resolve it, and we move on.
And how many black guys make jokes about white guys, and I think they're all funny.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Dave Chappelle's show, and he made fun of white people all the time.
Well, white people are funny.
White people are funny.
White people are funny.
Come on, man. White people don't even get the jokes, so it doesn't even matter.
Well, look how much.
It's just the Jews that get the jokes. Look how much we talk.
Look how much we talked about Daniel and his album now, because he pulled me up on that joke.
But Daniel has shared lots of things. I mean, he's a great
guy. Thanks, Daniel. I really
like him. And you know, and I'm so glad you like the record as much
as I love it.
I want to get the record now.
I love it. It's a
Daniel,
really,
send me
really
a signed copy.
Thoughtful record.
He will.
And I love it. And here's the negative thing I was gonna say. And it's not about him.
Okay.
The negative
about thing? Me?
No, it's about someone else and other people like him who, should I even say this?
Yeah.
I'll just say it. You know,
say it in a comedic
way. I recently heard
a
record that I'd never heard before, and it was a guy kind of doing the same thing that Daniel's doing.
Right.
But this guy is like super famous. And his record is a piece of shit. I mean, it's
and you're
one
not
of the
tell
worst.
Us who?
No, and it's one of the worst fucking things I've ever heard in my life. But this guy's been playing for good, probably 40 years more than Daniel has been playing, and he's supposed to be a professional. And how can a professional that knows as much as this guy does about music put out such a horrible record?
Because
and
he's
I'm
a star.
Thinking of, maybe, and I'm just thinking about, wow, here's this new guy, Daniel. And he's like, wow, this guy's a brand new, he's a new guy. And he comes out with a record that's more brilliant and more thoughtful and more musical than many professional jazz guitarists.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, wow.
But Daniel's not full time?
It doesn't have the virtuosity.
Yeah, he is. Oh, he is, okay.
It doesn't have the virtuosity as far as his playing, you know, of someone like, you know, like Kurt Rosenwinkel, who's obviously a virtuoso jazz guitar player, you know. I mean, that's
so was it
thing.
Kurt that you're talking about?
What's that?
Was it Kurt that you're talking about?
No. Because Kurt's records are always thoughtful. You know, Kurt puts a lot of effort into his records. You can hear it. He really does. You know, whether or not you like the music or not, you can tell that he really puts a lot of effort into making his records. You know, and some people like him and some people don't. You know, I like some of it and some of it I don't like, but I always appreciate his playing because he's a brilliant guitarist. And Daniel's not trying to be like a Kurt Rosenwinkel or somebody with mega chops or just a amazing, huge vocabulary. But Daniel is one of those guys that's able to tell a story with very few notes and get great, like Bill Frisell, you know, just like playing with nuances of sounds. And
but it's a lot more Sko-oriented than Frisell-oriented.
Yeah, maybe
well,
so,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, but again, neither. I mean, he's
neither,
his own thing.
Neither, yeah, because he has kind of his own thing. But the Frisell part is there, too, in some of the textures that he makes. But yeah, the Sko part of just being minimalistic and playing just with a lot of space and
crunch, and juxtaposition of harsh against beauty.
Right. It's a really good record, man. It's like, it really is like a record that you can listen to over and over and not get tired of.
Right.
It's a real cool record.
Wow, that's a whole
record. Daniel, we expect some royalties. Thank you.
Yeah,
there you go, Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel, I want a percentage of everything you make.
See? He's just
But don't you say it.
I won't say it. Okay. Daniel, I'm not saying it, dude.
Okay.
Well, you know, Daniel
asked
me. I
don't know why I'm talking to the computer.
He asked me, and I don't think he would mind. I don't think he would mind that I'm telling people this. He asked me, as all players do, you know, can I use your quote for my press, you know? And normally I would let him do it because I really like it. But I don't let anybody use my quotes in their press because a lot of guys ask me, and I'm sure a lot of guys ask Bruce, and if you say something, if you tell one guy, no, you can't use what I say, and then tell another guy, yes, you can use what I say, it really puts you in a horrible, awkward position in the public eye. You become like a music critic.
But let me tell you that.
I don't want to be a music
when
critic.
When I do finish my album, I'm probably going to say, I heard Scott say this.
Yeah.
And he won't own up to it, but I know he said it.
But you know how that is, like, you know,
yeah,
you
that's
know
fair.
When I was making my records.
I wonder really, though. I mean, you know, I said what I said because he asked what I thought, you know, and if I would have told him, really, I don't want to write anything because I don't have anything great to say, you know, I mean.
You would say that?
I've said that to guys. I said, I really don't have anything that I, you know, but I have written, you know, I'm a writer. So I get asked to write notes for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a strange voice, as you know, from listening to me talk, you know. So I write. There are guys where I just say, you know, I really can't think of anything that's going to work for you. Mm-hmm. You know, thanks for the opportunity. But, you know, best of luck. I'm not mm-hmm. going to be able to do it. You know, but the thing is me writing a couple of words on a CD is not going to sell that much shit for anybody.
Well,
so you know, I mean, I have that sort of fallback. It's like, yeah, well, okay, we were hoping for somebody more famous than you, anyways. Fuck you. You know?
Well, you know what? I'm just trying to be polite to everyone and not. Maybe I'm taking the coward's way out by just not doing it for anybody.
I mean, it would be great if you did know. Because you actually, I have
well, how
observed. No, wait a minute. I'm giving him a compliment. Let me do this.
Okay.
I have observed from numerous things, your writing is very thoughtful and very personal, and you have a really great voice. So I think your writing would be a great addition and asset to just the general dialogue. You know, I know you don't want to deal with having yes and no situations.
That's the only thing.
But I'm just saying it's a loss for all of us because you are a very good writer and a thoughtful person who has a unique voice.
Yeah, well,
but
thanks.
You know what? You know, the joke's on you.
What's that?
The joke's on you.
Why?
You've already fucking said it through this whole episode. You've done is praise him.
But see, this is Wankipedia and it's different because...
Yeah, nobody listens to it.
No one listens.
No, because we're not talking about... People don't ask to be on Wankipedia. That's right. A different thing.
But now Daniel can say, listen to Guitar Wank episode 85.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Yeah. But I'm just saying, people don't ask me,
right.
Scott, will you do an
But enough about Daniel. Can we talk about me now?
Wankipedia. What I'm saying is that when people ask me, like I had this, when I first made my website, I had links to some of my favorite guys' websites. Who are not only my friends, but I thought they're really good guitar players, like Mike Stern and Alan Holdsworth and some other guys that I really liked their playing, liked them as people. So why not link my website with them?
Of course.
Share the press, right?
Yeah.
Then I had a bunch of other guys start asking me, put my website up on your page.
Is Guitar Wanks up?
What's that?
Is Guitar Wanks up?
Yeah, of course it is. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I do. And then you have to say no. And right. That doesn't feel very good to say, no, I'm not going to put your link up on my website because I don't think you're good enough.
Yeah.
Or I don't think you deserve it. So I just took the whole page down.
Right.
No more links. You know? And then that way, I don't have to be a music critic. I don't like being a music critic.
You don't like confrontation.
It's not confrontation when you have to tell somebody, when you have to tell somebody that you're... album isn't good enough for me to say anything about it. That's not a very nice thing to say.
Well, it's only not good enough in your opinion.
It's still not a very nice thing to hear from somebody that
from,
you respect.
Well, someone that, yeah. They
probably and I know somebody that you once respected.
Yeah, once respected. Good point. You know, but I can remember when I was coming up and doing the first records as a band leader, I never asked a soul to comment about my record. I didn't feel I needed to. I wanted the music to speak for itself. I never went and asked Chick Corea to say, hey, will you write a blurb telling everybody that you like my record?
And he would have said, join Scientology and I will.
Well, I never asked Joe or I never asked anybody that I worked with to write, or anybody famous, to write a blurb about me because I thought it was fucking cheesy. You know?
It's cheesy, man. It's kind of a little cheesy, but also...
If you don't need anybody, let the music fucking speak
But people
itself.
Sending you albums, both you guys, to just listen to and say, hey, I did this, I'd love to get your feedback or whatever.
Feedback is not press.
Right. But if they're straight up, hey, would you write a blurb about this? Well, that's just assuming that you like it. That's kind of a little, like...
Well, no.
Well, you would say, I have never heard... anything like this before.
Yeah, this record is incredible.
Yeah, once I was with Barney Kessel and he, you know, he was famous for hating that shit, and once some guy came up to us and said, what'd you think of my playing, how do you like my playing?
Oh boy.
And Barney, that's a loaded question. Barney, I mean, I had been there the whole set and Barney was definitely not liking it,
right?
Barney just said to him, he says, well, you never sounded better.
Wow, there you go.
You know, which I really, like, I expected him to ream this guy, you know.
And he didn't. Well, that's nice.
But numerous times I saw him do it, so. Barney was not necessarily the most diplomatic guy.
Well, I gotta say, a lot of you jazz guys... Well, maybe, sir. A lot of jazz guys.
But then again,
are...
truthful is almost better than diplomatic in every case in the long run.
Okay.
Well, not in the press, though, right? I mean,
I don't know.
I don't think it's right.
You were the one that said any press is good press.
No, but I really don't. I don't like reading like press where musicians are putting other musicians down. We're all here to just try to make the world a better
place. Well, none of that press gets out, right?
Yeah, we just do it behind each other's back all the time. I'd rather us do it in the open. Man.
Well, you know, I know that there's...
See, you're not as tough and mean as you think you are.
I'm not that mean.
You are... He's got such a big heart, and you do really care about everyone so much, and you don't want to offend, and... A lot of people will be like, fuck it, I just didn't like it, or whatever.
I'm sort of like doing to others as you'd have them do to you. Do I really want to read some other musician putting down my record that I worked so hard on?
Yeah.
Or putting down my playing that I've really tried to work and improve all my life? I don't need that negative energy.
Yeah.
Why should I give it to other people?
Yeah.
You know, it's simple as that.
I posted a picture of Homer Simpson the other day, and I thought of you. Because he's like, you jazz guys just make that shit up.
Yeah, right. But like, getting back to what I was saying about that and blurbs and stuff.
Yeah.
Daniel didn't ask for a blurb until I had already said that I really love your record. Right. Then he asked for a blurb. That's completely different.
Different, yeah.
Yeah, because some guys, they send you a record and say, give me a good blurb about this record that you've never heard yet. And I'm like, fuck you. Don't even ask. Because how do you know I'm not going to hate it? And just the fact that you sent it to me for a blurb makes you an asshole.
Yeah,
and it makes you pretty much a cheesy motherfucker because you don't trust in your music enough that you need famous people to write quotes about it. Fuck that. I never asked anybody to write a quote about my shit because I thought it was cheesy and stupid. You know, I don't want to sell my music on somebody else's word. You know, that's bullshit.
Oh, that was
You know what I call it.
What?
You know what I call it.
What is it?
Yeah, I can't say it here.
But you understand.
Yeah, my point, right? You're exactly right. Yeah, exactly right.
But because I know guys that will say they will suck anybody's dick.
Really?
You know? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They will say anything. They will lie through their fucking teeth.
Are they playing jazz?
Yes. And they'll say how great a horrible jazz musician is just because he's their friend. And believe me, again, I'm not going to mention names, but I have seen very famous jazz people who are really great say amazing, beautiful, complimentary things about people who suck.
Right.
Just because they happen to be in the same religion or the same group or the same friendship clique. Or something like that, and it's horse shit. You read it and you go, I can't believe a guy this good is saying good things about this guy who
can't. Do you think that's happening a lot now with Trump?
Oh yeah, so many. He's getting so many positive reviews right now, even from,
you know, who we have to get on the show, and I got to get him on the show, is Leland Sklar.
Oh wow, let me tell you a story about this. You won't believe this. I mean, I'm on the road with Billy Cobham in South America.
Yeah,
right. We're talking about Spectrum, and
I think you've told the story.
Yeah, and I'm going, well, I did tell a story, and so I'll just briefly.
Yeah.
But not everybody hears every episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah, tell it.
I'm just saying.
Sorry, for instance, I'm never paying attention.
Spectrum, to me, is Billy Cobham and Jan Hammer, right, and Tommy Bolin. I mean, that's the three big names that you associate with Spectrum, because that was a giant leap in the fusion world. That was like one of the first highly recognized fusion albums, besides maybe Birds of Fire or Intermounting Flame or Hymn of the Seventh Galaxy like Chick or some of the Weather Report records. But this was right in there with them. It was a big record, and it made Tommy Bolin kind of a star.
Yep.
And Jan Hammer and Billy Cobham. But he never thought about the bass player. And I'm in the van with Billy, and I can't even remember who played bass on Spectrum. And Billy goes, "You are never going to guess in a million years." And I go, "Okay, surprise me." And he goes, "Lee Sklar." And I'm like, "You gotta fucking be kidding me." Because he's so funky. This old dude with this white beard, you know, playing the funkiest shit ever on the bass. And I would just never think that was him.
Right.
But he's a badass.
He's a monster,
he's
man.
He's a badass, man.
But I love his shit. He rips on Trump and all that.
Oh, yeah. I see his Facebook posts. He's a pretty funny cat.
I love it.
He does rip on Trump a lot.
Oh,
but I just
awesome.
never would. And I made the same mistake with Lenny White. I told you about this one, too.
I didn't think you told me.
I was playing with Lenny White in Russia.
Right.
When Dennis was sick, and he took his place for some gigs in Russia, and we were hanging around, and I said, you know, one of the we were talking about Chick, and I was saying, one of the records I really love by Chick is Griffith Park, you know, because it's got some of my favorite players, Freddie Hubbard, Joe Henderson, you know, Chick, Stanley Clark, but I can't remember who played drums on that. And Lenny White goes, I played drums and produced. I'm like, don't.
That's a great moment.
Lenny was so badass.
That's a great moment in sports.
Such a badass drummer, man.
That's fucking great. Oh, Lenny is one of the best guys I've played with. He's an amazing drummer. This is a total motherfucker.
Wow.
But I was just really embarrassed that I didn't know that.
I love that.
Foot and mouth disease.
Totally foot and mouth.
Hey, who we're gonna have Shane on?
Okay,
Shane.
You know, I believe there was a complaint.
Oh, awesome! I thought we'd get more.
Awesome.
And I believe it was from somebody we said nice things about tonight. So
who's that?
He complained to me, and he said he was gonna say he's tired of hearing about who we're gonna get as guests on the show.
No, we've had this complaint a lot.
And I'll be honest with you, I agree. I think let's talk about who we're gonna get as guests off the air, and let's let the guests come on and just be at a...
Oh, you want to keep it all secret now?
As far as I'm concerned, we don't need no guests. I mean, it's just celebrity-ass bullshit. I don't want to go into the LA thing.
I don't get this celebrity-ass bullshit.
No, it is celebrity. We're trying to get stars on the show.
You're a celebrity.
I'm not a celebrity. And now, here's the deal.
You guys are celebrities.
I think having interesting people on the show and bring them on and let them tell their story, we don't need to spend time on the show talking about who we want to get. I mean, if you want to talk about somebody you really love and what you love about their music, great, talk about it. But let's not talk about having them as a guest.
All right, well...
I really agree with that.
I have to say I agree, too. It's like we're talking about the podcast on the podcast. We don't really need to do it.
It's only taken you motherfuckers 85 shows to work this out.
Yeah,
so,
but I do agree that we don't need to know who
okay,
we're
but
have
I'm very
half
willing
the time
to say good night.
Anyway.
I'm willing to say good night and think about who we're going to invite and stuff. Yeah,
well, no, I was actually leading up to the 100th show.
But I'm just saying that a lot of times the guys we want and say we're going to get, we don't. Because like I
because they don't even know who the fuck we are, yeah. Or because they don't care.
Because you guys aren't big enough celebrities.
Or because Or because everybody in the world has a podcast and they're getting asked to be on everybody's podcast.
Let me tell you something that's really, really important that came up during this Alan thing when Alan wanted to be a guest on the podcast. As I told a lot of fans of Alan's. Bruce does not live in L.A. He only comes here once in a great while. We can't promise that you're going to be in town when he's in town. And a lot of these guys that come to town and would be glad to come over for a podcast is during the time when Bruce isn't here. So it's not that easy to have guests.
A little correction. You know? I am here like during the school year a lot more than
But I'm just saying, just because you're in L.A. isn't a given that we're going to have time and we're going to be doing
but there are guys we have on our radar and we really want interesting guests and we appreciate that people want to be on here and more to what you were kind of bringing up, we have a 100th show coming up and it really would be nice to hit a home run with somebody who we all admire as a icon of the world of guitar. It would be great to have that person on our 100th show.
But we don't know,
and we're I'm not mentioning it. No, and we agree that we're not going to talk about it. But I think that everybody agrees that hey, we have managed to put out a podcast every freaking Monday, occasionally on a Tuesday. That you know what I mean? For 80 something episodes, and we're going to make 100.
100 shows,
you know, and we're not being paid. We're doing this out of love. And we've created a really cool community, which is a big thing I'm about. And I think this is great. We've argued and we've brought up a lot of topics that made people think about their playing and made people think about the purpose of music in their life.
And quitting.
And I think this is what we're here to do. What?
And quitting.
And quitting, yeah. You know, I said that to one of my students the other day.
And quitting.
I told him, you know, he wanted advice, you know, and it was pretty bloody. And I said, well, I'd take 6 months off, then quit.
Right. You know, Willis.
You don't want to do it all at once.
There was a girl that came up to Willis. I can't remember her name. bass teachers at MI. And after a Tribal Tech show at MI, she came up to Willis and said, geez, after listening to you play, I just feel like throwing my bass in the garbage. And Willis said, well, music's not for everybody.
But anyways, we just want you to know, oh dear Guitar Wank listeners, that we are always thinking about guests and particularly our 100th show.
Well, they know that because we have
but we're not going to talk about it anymore.
We're not going to do it anymore.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
So but I will mention the 100th show. It's been suggested by a bunch of fans that maybe we do a video feed on that.
That would be cool if it's a particularly visually exciting experience.
Well, it's not. It's not going to be, but
why would they want that? Is you know they're
well, we should do something a little different.
I thought they're like sitting on the subway or in their cars laughing. What do they want video from? They should not be looking at video when they're driving their
car. We have a lot of people driving cars while they're listening to this show.
Right.
Look out!
Yeah.
Just fucking it.
That was good, Troy.
Right.
You just caused 3 accidents and 2 babies.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. We have had a request for more jokes on the show. I'm not a joke teller.
I think I told my joke. I told a joke like over the summer, didn't I? Was there a joke about Tom?
Tom?
Oh, maybe not. I told a joke. Okay. Well, maybe I didn't tell it. Well, I'll tell it again. This is great. People have to listen to a joke twice. This is some serious jazz timer stuff. Okay, so this guy, he goes to the doctor. And he says, Doc, I got this problem. He says, what? He says, like, you know, yesterday I went outside, looked at the lawn. It's beautiful, green, you know. And I started singing at the top of my lungs.
Oh, you've told this joke like 3 times now.
No, only once.
No, I think there's at least two. Once.
Okay. Then I'll stop.
Wait, I want to hear it. I don't remember.
You know, Tom Jones.
I've got Alzheimer's. I don't remember it.
Well, no, I haven't told it to you, but I told it while you were gone.
All right.
But, sorry, folks.
But see, I do try and change topics or keep it going because I know you guys are thinking of a joke. And when I say tell a joke, you just don't tell a joke. You need to be
You know what? I'm going to tell you exactly what Lloyd Bridges said to Robert Stack in Airplane. when Robert Stack said, "I don't know. Do you think what I'm doing is funny? I mean, you think the people will get the joke?" And Lloyd Bridges says, "You don't get it. We are the joke."
I'll tell you, I don't mind the laughing. It's the pointing that bothers me.
The pointing that bothers me, right? It's the pointing.
Amazing, I think that's man. It. I can't top that.
Amazing.
Yeah, good night, Irene.
That's a good one.
That is good.
Do you have any questions or mails? Because
I
do. Just to say this, you know, my week, I could do a little bit more because my schedule is going to be really hell this next. So if we can get a little more out of this, it'd be great. Because boy,
okay. Well, that should have been an. You just got to say, you know, and of course you're not going to do it, so all the people are going to hear how lame we are. But that should have been an ending point of a show.
Yeah,
maybe.
Well,
so,
it is an ending point because it's just an editor.
No, you're not
going to
hear. You're not going to hear it. You're just going to like.
Yeah, I know. I look
it.
For
no,
those.
You're just
going
to like throw a bunch of slap a bunch of shit up on the air.
I know you're.
I know the way you do things. I listen to some of these. Podcasts.
No, you guys don't listen to the show.
You're wrong.
But I'm just saying.
I hire people. I've outsourced. No, dig. I've outsourced guys in India to listen to this show.
Oh, wow.
So for 30 cents an hour, they listen and report to me
what
it sounds like.
So do you have any questions? Anybody?
Yeah, I got questions.
Hope that wasn't a racist joke.
Questions for the guys.
Was that a racist joke?
What's
a... Nah. Oh, good.
Nah.
What's... Well, the Tom Jones joke?
No, the outsourcing to India.
Oh, right. No, I don't think that's...
Okay.
I didn't mean it.
But, I mean, I've been... I love
we have Indian got Indians. We have Indian got fans food. In India.
There must be some questions.
That we
are
have
there
questions.
Fans in India? Do we have fans in India?
We got fans in India.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, shit, yeah.
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 Really?
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
No, we do.
Go to any 7-Eleven.
Some of them.
Wow. Well, email me. I want to hear.
Now that
from
was
you.
Racist.
See, that was a racist joke.
Yeah. What did he say?
I said, just go to any 7-Eleven.
Yeah, that was.
So that was
I'm
racist.
I'm glad you said totally that racist. Because you know there was a second.
Look, we all need to take a fucking chill pill. The whole racism thing. It's like fucking that ain't racism.
So well, you know, and the transgender thing. You know, the truth of the matter is, I got to tell you guys.
Cocks and frocks?
No, I got to tell you, it was a transgender thing. I was a man trapped in a woman's body for 9 months.
Well, I've always been a lesbian trapped in a man's body. I mean, that's how I was born.
I just want to say with this transgender, I was trapped in a woman's body for 9 months. You know, so I know what they're feeling.
I was, yeah, for 9 months, yeah.
It's when they start giving the Woman of the Year award to a cock and a frock. That's when I get a little pissed off.
What's a cock and a frock?
A cock and a frock.
That was a very, 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 you know, sensitively worded. You know,
what
transgender.
Is that?
A frock.
What is a frock?
A cock
a frock.
And a frock. A guy with a dress.
Yeah, a guy with a dress.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ,
but that's
man.
Transsexual. That's not transgender.
Cock
well,
and
they
frock.
Gave. Well, who's the like Olympian
Bruce
that they?
Jenner.
Bruce Jenner.
Caitlin.
They gave him Woman of the Year award.
They gave her.
Her. Well. He's got a cock. He's cocking a frock.
Didn't he have a sex change?
Not yet.
Operation?
No, he hasn't.
Because I've been around women that have had the operation, lots of them.
Yeah.
And
whoa.
And good night, ladies and gentlemen.
No,
thank you for getting me.
There's a club that I go to every
I
time.
I think we've been having the wrong podcast.
No, man. Let me tell you. I've got stories.
All right. Let's start this show.
We're not going to. You don't even want to hear
I want to hear the stories.
Because every year when I go to Japan, I go to Jack and Betty's. I never miss it.
What's Jack and Betty's?
Jack
it
and
sounds
Betty's
like a place
is a really
I'd love.
Great club in Osaka.
Right.
Where all the performers are women that used to be men.
Right.
And they come to your table and they hang out with you and they're topless and they're actually ridiculously gorgeous.
Yep.
And I had a really fun conversation with one for hours about the whole thing, about the whole process of, you know, wanting to change your sex and everything. It was really interesting and fun to talk to these women who
yep.
used to be men.
Yep.
But one of the funniest things is that one of the guys from one of the schools at MI started kissing one of these girls at the table
right.
and like really making out with her. and which was pretty hot, you know, to see this is going on right here at the table.
Yep.
And I asked my friend, who was also a teacher at MI Japan, I said, now he's kissing her, and she's a girl, and she's quite beautiful, but she used to be a man. I mean, does this make that guy gay? And my friend goes, well, that's kind of a gray area.
Anyway, you know, and it's funny, but it also illuminates the real fact. This, you know, it doesn't matter.
People are people.
It doesn't
man.
Fucking
it
matter.
Doesn't people. Matter. It doesn't matter. We want to put a label of gay. We want to put a label of yeah, woman. Man. It's yeah. like, you
that's
know,
what we need Mike Pence for.
You know, right? Yeah, right. Does, he does that well. Fucking, you know,
he does that really well.
And maybe he's right. It will lead to barnyard bestiality.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, which will probably make my band Cowbop ever more popular.
That's right. It will.
I knew you were going somewhere with that.
You know the Baptist joke where the guy's talking to his Baptist preacher, and he just got married, and he goes, well, now that, you know, I'm married to this girl, I can pretty much have sex with her any way I want. And the Baptist preacher goes, of course you can. He says, that means I can, like, have sex with her in the bathtub? Of course, she's your wife. I can have sex with her, you know, what they call doggy style. And the Baptist minister says, she's your wife, of course. I can have sex with her standing up. The guy goes, no, absolutely not. He goes, why? Because that could lead to dancing.
That's a good
Guess
one.
Baptists
I like
don't
that.
Like to dance. So they don't,
I love
they don't
it.
Think it's dancing.
That's where Footloose
there's,
come from.
There's another three very important facts about religion.
What?
Jews do not recognize Jesus as the Son of God and the Messiah. Jews do not recognize Muhammad as the leader of religion or whatever. And Baptists do not recognize each other in the liquor store. I had a ton of Baptist jokes.
I love it.
I got a list of these. I got a list of these. I could go on.
Didn't they used to have there was a restaurant on Melrose. Melrose
oh,
Avenue.
The drummer was dragging.
What was the restaurant on Melrose Avenue that used to have all the trannies in it?
Years ago.
I believe tranny would be seen as like an insensitive statement.
Fucking hell, I can't do anything. I can't
right.
shit in a bucket now?
All I know is, I don't know, but Daniel might be pissed off about that.
Daniel, if you get mad about that, we're going to stop saying nice things about your record. But,
you know, anyway, I was going to say a lot of those trannies were just unbelievable gorgeous, and you had to keep telling yourself, well, yeah, that's not what my eyes are seeing. But anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, it is what my
and I have
is.
A song about that, you know.
What?
You know, I have a song about that.
What's that?
You've heard my song.
What's it called?
You've heard me sing that song.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Well,
Let's leave it quiet because people have to come hear it live. I don't...
Oh, like, he doesn't want to...
Learning
he doesn't
on
wanna,
the
well,
internet.
Yeah.
Okay. He doesn't want to... Yeah.
So go ahead.
I have five
right,
people
I do have a question.
Games.
And to all that transsexual or whatever sexual listeners you are out there... Don't be offended.
Yeah, what would a trans musical person look like?
Trans musical?
Yeah.
That's a good, wow.
Yeah.
You just blew my mind.
Well, I'm glad I did.
That's incredible. All right,
I
got a question.
That's what the world needs.
Trans, we need more trans musical. What's the worst not guitar related job that you have had?
What's that?
What's the worst like non-guitar related job that
oh,
you've
I
had
can tell
in
you
your life.
In my life, definitely.
And it's, this show is the highlight of his Monday.
No, you know, seriously, I've had to do a lot of jobs on the phone because my hair was too long and weird looking to get a real job. Because I used to have this huge afro. I was,
oh, that's right.
Know,
I've seen the
you've
pictures.
You've seen the pictures of me with my big afro.
Fucking amazing.
Who's going to hire a guy like that in a real job?
But let's talk about that afro. That was amazing afro.
Well, my heritage could be that I'm part black. I have no idea because
should do DNA
because I you know like I don't know my parents. I'm adopted, so
oh you are
yeah. I have no idea what my biological status is.
Oh, you know
so,
you got
so there might be some.
You're
black.
From Africa,
he did the
dude.
DNA yeah. And he's part pit bull.
Yeah, pit bull, part
part
beagle,
Doberman,
part beagle. But anyway, so I had this amazing big ass afro, and nobody would hire me at a real job because. They just wouldn't.
You get so many acting
gigs
now.
So I had to sell
It was just porno for him.
Sell aluminum siding over the phone and sell pins to banks and sell tickets to the policeman's and the fireman's ball. Oh,
that's so cliche, but it almost sounds like a Simpson episode.
Phone sales jobs were the jobs for people who didn't look the part of a real salesman in a real store. So you had to do phone sales. So I had so many phone sales jobs.
What age are we talking?
Late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, okay.
And the thing is what was funny about him is that no one took him seriously, because if you got fired off one job, there was no way that anybody would ever have any reference to the last job you were on, so you could just go get another one, and you could get them just like that and lose them just like that.
Right.
So we did millions of them and never kept them more than 2 weeks, because we were fucking around and joking too much and making crank calls. You know, like a typical thing would be to say, like, to someone who doesn't want, you know, would you like a ticket to the fireman's ball, sir? No, I don't think I'd be interested. Well, when your house burns down, we won't be interested in you either. And shit like that. I could think of a million things
that
people said over the phone. And, you know, if your boss caught you saying something like that, of course, you're out the door. And you're fucking around so much that you really don't make that many
sales. What were you getting paid
for that? Oh, minimum wage. Right. Nothing more than minimum wage.
That's fucking great.
But I did those. I did a lot of those. In fact, I did this aluminum siding gig where I was selling aluminum siding.
And aluminium in Australia.
Yes. And there was a guy who, his name was Mr. Syatt. And he was the guy who I was trying to hook these people up with. And Mr. Syatt was the guy who was going to come out to their house and, you know, evaluate their garage and determine whether aluminum siding was going to work, whether it was needed. And Mr. Syatt was a complete drunk, like total alcoholic. He was never sober that I ever saw him. He was stumbling, literally stumbling around the office. So it was almost impossible to say his name without laughing in the interview, because you were reading text and it said, I would like to make an appointment with you and Mr. Syatt. And no one could ever say his name without laughing, because he was like a bumbling drunk.
Right.
Now I'm going to send this bumbling drunk over to your house.
And then Lord knows he changed his name to Trump.
Right. That's my job.
That's your job, Bruce?
It's your only job.
It's too traumatic. I can't talk about it.
Hey, I was a mechanic.
What kind of mechanic?
Car mechanic.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
For my dad, because my dad owned auto parts stores. So I was stock boy and I was mechanic. I turned brake drums and did the heads, you know, of engines.
Yeah.
You shaved the bad part of the head off, you know. And just, you know, general auto stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. Not that I know anything about cars now, but I apparently did back then a little bit more than I do now. Damn. That was a job that was fun, and my dad was the only one that would hire me with my afro.
Hey, your pictures of your afro are awesome.
And don't think that his employees didn't make fun of me on a daily basis, which they definitely enjoyed doing.
Well, you were going places. That's all that mattered. Mm. Bruce, you must have some.
Can't talk about it.
Come on, man. How many horses? Was it artificial insemination with horses or something? Or
no, male prostitute?
Gigolo.
I've done numerous things that I don't want to talk about.
Stripper.
He slept his way to the middle.
I scratched and clawed my way to the bottom. I plan to stay here for a while.
You must have one job that you can remember that you can share.
I have numerous, but like, I don't want to talk about it.
Not one.
I don't want to share that part of my mystique with people. I don't want to put that out there.
I have many.
I actually plan to run for office later, and this will hurt me.
It's all going to come out.
You sure about that?
Yeah, it will all come out. I mean,
I don't think so.
Dude, it can't be any more worse than grabbing pussies. So, you know. It can't be any more worse than that. So,
well, next question then.
All right. Well,
you know it can.
Mine was being a jelly bean on Hollywood Boulevard. That was pretty bad.
In the heat.
I heard you got in a fight with an M&M.
I know. You know what? When you're in those suits, I actually thought it'd be a really cool idea to do. It paid 25 an hour or something. But you'd be surprised how many people want to hit the guy in the suit.
Uh-huh.
Like, everyone wants to hit the guy. And when you have a lot of different people walking on Hollywood Boulevard, a lot of people want to jab and hit and punch the guy in the jelly bean suit.
Mm-hmm.
So after 2 hours, I'd quit and I was already done. So that was a pretty shitty job.
But I did hear you got in a fight with an M&M.
I did. The other guy was in an M&M suit, my mate. Yeah, we used to fight, but I had a lot of shitty jobs.